Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Delaney. So what?
Welcome along to this slightly experimental episode. We're calling it the Owen Odyssey. Part one, we're having a look. It's not a deep dive. We're just dipping our toes into Michael Owen's most recent autobiography, which is called Rebooted. Sam's read it. I've just had a little bit of a look at a couple of chapters that we're going to cover today. We'll see if there's anything in there. There might not be. We just don't know. We're diving blind, if you like, Sam.
Well, I have read it, but it was a few months ago. I remember at the time, loved it, like thinking it was really funny. I think, you know, if you want my quick overview of my impression of the book, is that he's called it Reboot, and he's sort of wearing a hoodie on the front cover and trying to look a bit like a bad boy. And what and part of the book is it's an exercise in trying to change his image as an extremely dull man.
Right, yeah.
Because that's what he's always struggled with. And, you know, there's so... I mean, it's just become like a well-known footballing trope that Michael Owen is very boring and tedious, you know. He did that Guide to Dubai that time in the helicopter, which was really boring. His co-commentary always sounds boring. He's got a monotone voice, right? And also, you know, back in those heady days of the noughties where it was sort of him and Beckham were the two golden boys of English football... Mm-hmm. He was set against Beckham, who was very glamorous and lived this kind of rock star life, as the sort of boring, basic boy next door. So anyway, this book seems to be entirely an exercise in trying to confront that. But at every turn, it sounds like he protests too much. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of kind of, yeah. Anyway, what a lot of people don't know is I smoked a fag once. So what?
I mean,
one time I stayed out round my mates and my mum was like, Michael, where are you? And I was like, well, I'm not calling my mum. I don't need to.
It was one time when I let the MOT lapse on the car.
Yeah, and
it wasn't MOT for, it was, I think it was 4 days.
I mean, I was just just breaking the law. I was driving around. Yeah. It was like being a cowboy.
No, I didn't actually drive around in it. I made sure it was in the garage, but it wasn't MOT.
And I got my SORN certificate.
I didn't even go for the SORN.
S-O-R-N.
I didn't even go for the SORN.
I didn't even get the SORN.
I think we found the voice there as well. Quite quickly. All right, let's have a look. We'll start at chapter 4, then, which is where he has been called up into the England squad. It's pre-98 World Cup. Glenn Hoddle, of course, is the manager, and it's that infamous get together that they had when the squad was whittled down from, I think it was 26 maybe to 22, and a few players missed out. Most famously, of course, Gazza was ejected from the squad at this point. Was it La Manga or someone like that?
Yeah, I think it was La Manga, and you know, they did it like X Factor judges' houses.
They did, yeah.
You know,
Glenn Hoddle invented that concept, yeah.
Yeah, you walked into the room and Glenn Hoddle was flanked by John Gorman and, weirdly, Sunita, dressed in some gigantic palm leaves.
Yeah.
There you go, come in, Paul. Yeah, you know, John, and this is Sunita, who's going to be helping us out in our preparations for the World Cup. Sunita, hand me the envelope.
I've never heard of you. I'm only 18. Sunita, of course, that'd be 13 years after her prime.
It was. 12 or 13. Yeah, but Sunita never ages.
Sunita does not age. That's true.
She does not age.
Yeah.
If anything, she looks better than she did back in her 80s chart days.
I don't know what she knows about Simon Cowell that has led to him supplying her with some illicitly acquired anti-aging, I don't know,
a serum.
Yeah.
If you look at him, he's had all sorts of daft facelifts, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So whatever he's got, he's given it all to her and hasn't held any back for himself, I don't think.
Exactly. That's probably part of the trade-off, though. He's been told that he's not allowed to touch the serum. But,
Anyway, these days, in the 90s, she was working freelance at Glenn Hoddle's judge's house in La Manga, helping to whittle down the squad. I just think you've had all this time to assess the players, right? And you're on the verge of the World Cup. And I just think that by that stage, having had 2 years of preparation for the World Cup qualification and so on, that you should be able to pick a squad. And I think there is something very cruel, almost like you're exercising some kind of Roman emperor style ego trip, to call a squad that's too big, knowing that you will then... I mean, imagine that, man. You're part of the gang. You're part of the group, right? It's really exciting. You're all getting ready. You're all getting into that mindset. One of the greatest things you can do in your whole life, you're going to go and represent your country at a World Cup. You're probably having a laugh with all the lads. And then just as they're about to go, you go, actually, you're not coming. You're not coming, cunt. Fuck off. Go home. Watch it on the box, yeah? What? Why not? Well, despite the fact that I have been watching you play for your club side consistently for 2 years, despite the fact you've been in several other England squads and played for me throughout qualifications and in friendlies, I have assessed you over these last 4 days out here in La Manga, and I've decided, after all, you're not fucking good enough. You're shit. Fuck off.
I mean, it's
me,
it's...
John Gorman, and Sunita, and what's her name? Who was the witch he had with her?
Who was the what?
The witch that he went around with, Glenn Hoddle.
Oh, Eileen Drury. Yeah, forgot about that. She's
so that was his fucking team. Sunita, Eileen Drury, John Gorman, and Gorman. Glenn Hoddle. Yeah, me and the team have sat down and we've decided, Gazza, that you used to be good, but now we think you are shit. Fuck off. Don't invite them there. You should know. It's so cruel to invite them along. Keep it clean. Announce the squad. That's it. Have standby players. Fine. Cases injuries. But just name your squad. Name some standing players so they know not to go too balmy and fuck off. Although, imagine being a standing player. That's purgatory. Like, on standby. Because it's like, the other lads, you're either in the World Cup squad or you're out in Ibiza. Right? Mm. But if you're on standby, you can't go and have a laugh in Ibiza. But neither are you at the World Cup. So you're having to sit home. Probably having to train out in your back garden or your home gym every day, just in case you get called up.
I mean, the sensible thing to do is to name the squad, name the standbys, and then take them all the way to La Manga or wherever. Everyone knows where they stand.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, don't leave them behind at home training in the garden. Take them with you. But they know that they're probably going to go home anyway. But, I mean, Glenn Hoddle displaying an ego while England manager. I don't think we ever saw any indications of that, did we?
Listen, people are negative about Glenn Hoddle. I personally thought he was a really good England manager, and I always felt bad for him that there was that big... In fact, if you think of it, that thing where he talked about the disabled people sinning in past life, echoes of Pharmacy Gate and me...
Only because it was.
I'm not saying I said anything as bad or as controversial as him, but it's an early example of the dogpile mentality.
Yeah.
Whereby someone said something, everyone fucking leaps on it, and before he's got a chance to contextualise, that's it. He's done. He's out.
Toast.
So do you know what I mean? Once a dogpile started, it can't stop.
We're 9 minutes in, and we've established that Glenn Hoddle, not only did he invent the judge's house in X Factor, he also was the pioneer of the dog pile.
But, he was the first victim of the modern dog pile.
I guess so.
And there was a big era for dog piles because, as we'll see, before that, David Beckham was dogpiled because of his activities in this World Cup.
Yeah, we come to that. If we get to that in this episode, I suspect we won't. So Michael says, at some point on the trip, we were all assigned a 5-minute appointment to see the gaffer in his hotel room. I wonder if there was a stopwatch that he had on the wall. You've got 5 minutes and then you're out the door. He says, I was 2/3 of the way down the list. While me and the later guys were sitting around the pool speculating who'd be in and who wouldn't, someone came out and said, lads, Gazza isn't in the squad. To me, this is unfathomable news. Initially, I thought he'd be the first name on the team sheet alongside Alan Shearer. And then another rumour spread that all meetings had been pushed back by half an hour because Gazza had flipped, thrown chairs around and generally smashed the room up. And do you know who they sent along?
Generally.
Generally, yeah. I'm going to generally smash this up. That lamp's going over. I'm going to tip the bed aside and I'm going to squeeze all the toothpaste out in the bathroom.
It's a general smash up. Nothing fancy.
Yeah.
Nothing OTT. But
no,
at the same time,
broken.
Things are going to get smashed.
And do you know who was sent along to try and calm Gazza down?
Who?
Good old David Seaman.
That is the perfect choice.
Yeah.
It is the perfect choice because he's a gentle giant. He commands natural respect. I think that if they'd sent, who was the catcher at that time? Tony Adams. Tony Adams, an eccentric. You just don't know
Adams could have just easily said the wrong thing and made it 100 times worse.
Yeah, exactly. But Seaman doesn't have to say much. He goes in, he's a big gentle giant, he could probably pick Gazza up. And he's got that lovely sort of comforting Yorkshire accent, hasn't he? Like, come on now, Paul. No. What's all this? A general smash up?
I think we should send David in because he's big and he's from the north. So he'll understand him. They'll understand him. And he'll also be able to pin him down if he starts again.
I've done some diagrams here, John Gorman. Just a few sketches. And this, if you look at this, this is an image of what it would be like. And I've drawn them to scale, obviously. If David Seaman was to lie on top of Gazza. As you can see, Gazza has very little room for manoeuvre. He can't. There'll be no smashing out. He can't move.
I've actually drawn David as a bear there as well, because I enjoy drawing bears. I find it very soothing. So Seaman was sent along, and it says,
"Paul, what's this, man? Oh no, Paul!
Oh no! I'll tell you what, Paul. I'll go and get some tools, and we'll put this chair back together. Me and you will have a good chat about what's happened, and maybe we can learn a few lessons about how we've all conducted ourselves today. How does that sound? You put kettle on." So, that was it. That was the Gazza was gone. And Michael talks about when he first got into the squad and that training camp. Steve McManaman showed me around, he said. He's where we have breakfast in the morning, he said. There's where we have our team meetings, he added. And then he opened the door to a room with a giant screen on the wall. And there was Gazza sitting playing video games on the big screen. All right, he said, barely looking up. As I walked over to shake his hand, I took careful note of the empty wine bottles on the table in front of him.
Oh, careful note. Interesting.
And the empty sleeping pill packets.
Nah.
Fuck, yeah. I thought, oh my
this
God,
is
this is
Gazza's
bad. Gazza's rig, yeah. Wine, video games. I mean, Mario Kart, maybe.
And pills. All right, doesn't even look up. We're having a great time in here. Do you want to join in?
Yeah.
Oh, no, thank you, Gazza. Yeah, whatever. I don't even know who you are.
Do you play in front of me or behind me? In front. Right, I'll pass forwards to you then.
Do you want me to pass the ball to you?
Yes, please, if you get an opportunity.
Play your cards right and I might. Want any pills or wine?
Thanks, not at the moment. Have you had enough
yourself.
Wine for today?
Suit yourself, you snobby cunt.
Have you finished all your own wine, like?
Where are your pills?
I haven't got any pills.
Why not? What? How'd you get to sleep?
I run
Do you have to bash yourself over the head with a big mallet?
I run around a lot and I get tired. Oh,
fucking hell.
I used to do that.
Them were the days.
Oh, God.
Fucking hell, Gazza's room. Kind of, it's like Prince Margaret's special room she used to have, didn't she?
Yeah.
They say.
It's just a bit Michael Jackson-esque, isn't it? Locked away in his own private world.
Yeah.
With these things to
And Michael Owen at this stage is 17, right? I mean, a child. Yeah. A fucking child. He shouldn't have been exposed to that sort of thing.
Well, that's what he mentions a bit later on. He talks about he gets it suggested that he should have been a more vocal and mature member of the squad. But yeah, like he says, he was just a kid and he was dragged along and he did his job. But it was extraordinary what he did, because he shouldn't have been doing that sort of stuff at that age on that kind of platform. But we'll get to that a bit later on. He says, from that moment on, Gazza and I formed as comfortable an affinity as anyone could with him. There was definitely a healthy degree of mutual admiration that continues to this day. I always and still do want the very best for him. when my appointment came round, I walked into the room and looked around for signs of Gazza's reputed damage. There was none. Everything looked perfectly orderly, and Glenn himself was calm as if nothing had happened.
Yeah.
Okay, John Gorman. Okay, John Gorman. Full reset, 30 minutes.
Go. Hey, boss.
That's a physical reset of the room and also a reset of our minds and psyches.
Glenn, there are certain items that have been smashed. I will require some super glue of some sort to reassemble, for instance, this vase that Gazza smashed.
Right. Sweep that up, put it in the wardrobe.
No one's going to notice it's gone. I don't know. Ray Parlour is a very observant man. The first thing he'll say when he walks in is, where is that vase?
Was there well, then, also?
Your only choice is to go into the local supermarket there down the road in La Manga and see if they stock super glue. But frankly, I don't know if they have super glue in this country.
They might just have Prit. I don't know. And we haven't really got time. We've set ourselves a 30-minute reset. We don't really have time to go down and experiment.
Sunita, could you go down? But I'm just wearing these leaves. Yeah, it might caught too much attention. Here's an idea then. Irene, can you think the vase back together?
I'll
give it my best, Glenn. Eileen puts two fingers against each temple and stares at the broken vase. No, it's not working.
I think it moved a little bit there, Eileen. I think one of the fragments spirits, moved.
The spirits do not will it. I am merely a conduit for them. They do not will the vase to be put back together. And so it is.
Vase reassemblage is not within my remit.
Right, John, you really are just going to have to sweep that up.
Put it in the wardrobe.
Jalapeño.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Jalapeño.
It was also reported as well that he had a Kenny G CD on, didn't he? Well, he had people
in. To calm people down.
To keep people calm, yeah. But who knows? So then,
hello, Robbie Fowler, come in. Do you enjoy the music of Kenny G? What?
Kenny G!
He's not even Celt. Is he Celt? I don't believe he is, no. Ah, it's not the Beatles, is it?
Have you not got the greatest hits of the farm? They're great.
What about Echo on the Body, man? I'd find that relaxing.
God. So Michael went in for his appointment, and Glenn just said, first of all, you're coming. You're in the squad. Michael says, phew. And then Glenn adds, phew. Phew, boss. And I don't want you to think you're just coming for a ride. You have a big part to play in this tournament, he then said. So there we are. The challenge has been set down for him. And he says, as it turned out, when June came around, the World Cup in France was a huge eye-opener. If it had been me managing an England squad 20 years ago, I'm not certain I would have done it in the manner of Glenn Hoddle. So that's is that controversial? That's not really that controversial, is it?
Well, it's just like, oh, I just said it's a fucking mad thing, and it would have been really bad for the spirit of the camp. And people say Gazza was mad. Clearly he was mad at the time, but fucking anyone would have felt like smashing it up. Especially Gazza. I mean, he would have had none of us saw it coming. Do you know what? It's a bit like people say about JFK when he was killed, or to our generation, it's a bit more when you heard that Lady Di was dead.
Yeah.
I remember exactly where I was when I heard the news that Gazza wasn't going to the World Cup in 98. I suppose the equivalent, if you're a youngster listening to this and you weren't about in those days, the equivalent is England would be going to World Cup and the news would break that, I mean, we don't really have an equivalent star to Gazza anymore, but I suppose it would be like Harry Kane or possibly Raheem Sterling. And it was just announced that, you know, out of the blue, with no explanation, a fully fit Harry Kane has just not been picked.
Yeah.
That is what it was like, because he remained our talisman and our star. And people didn't think that England had any... That he was our only creative... People thought he's our only creative force. The whole team is built around him.
Yep.
And it was really... I was on holiday in Italy, and my brother had a mobile phone, but it being 98, that was quite rare, and signal was hard to get. Mm. And he was upstairs trying to get signal to pick up a message, and he picked up a message from another of our brothers who had rung us up in Italy, which in those days, of course, was, you know, still quite
cost
a big deal
a lot of
to
money,
call someone
yeah.
when they're abroad.
Well, it will do again soon, won't it? Cheers, Brexit.
He'd left a voicemail, all crackly, and it was like... Gazza's been dropped from
London
the World
calling.
Cup squad.
London calling.
Hello, is this Italy? This is London calling. After the pips, I shall reveal breaking news from the England World Cup camp. Beep, 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 beep. Gazza has been dropped. Beep, 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 beep. He has generally smashed up a hotel room. Beep, 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 beep. There ends the message.
Kenny G music not confirmed. So Michael says that Glenn was adamant that our squad environment at La Balle in Brittany should be a camp in the purest of senses. Within that camp, we weren't allowed newspapers and we weren't allowed the radio on. We weren't allowed to interact with any of our family or friends, even after the games. These were big calls Glenn made at that time. Mm. Probably for the best. Can you imagine Gazza in that kind of environment? Fucking hell, permanent lockdown.
We've had every type of England camp, if you think about it. Because we had that, which was obviously really mad.
Yeah.
But that's what I'd Euro 96, where Altel was a bit like, oi, oi, lads, get a beer in.
We're on our turf. It's all right.
It's chair. Let's go to Hong Kong and do a dentist chair. Right. And then you had under Capello, it sounded like fucking hell.
Yeah.
Right, like in South Africa, where he's like, you all have to go to bed, right? Because that's what Italians do. Don't come in and try and make English people who adore fun, right, act like Italians who are quite weird and boring.
All the walls in the rooms all been painted grey.
Yeah.
You will all look
stare at
grey and nothing
wall.
Else.
Stare at the wall and then you fall to sleep and you must not dream. And you must not dream about anything. No
dreaming is banned.
No dreaming. That is not the Italian way. So that was shit.
You have to sleep in this special helmet.
But then he got Baden-Baden, where apparently they're all shagging each other's mums and doing coke.
It was a big bunga bunga party, wasn't it, Baden-Baden?
Baden-Baden just sounds like the best fun to have ever happened.
Yeah. That's someone what we judge the tournaments on.
Do you know what? That would genuinely be a really... You know that Sky now make these films where they recreate famous moments?
Yeah.
They dramatise them. Don't you think someone should make a dramatisation with famous actors of Baden-Baden?
Yeah, we'll do it.
Be fucking great, wouldn't it? Yeah, you can play Sven-Göran Eriksson. I'll be Tord Grip.
Oh, what was Tord Grip's name again? It was one of the translators. I've forgotten now.
Strong Hand, wasn't it?
Was that what it was? I'm going to quickly Google it, see if I can find out.
Tord Grip translator. Yeah, I think we were obsessed with this for a while when we did our World Cup recap.
Yeah, Thunder Grip, apparently.
Thunder Grip! Fucking next James Bond film. Actually, the pair of them did look... They were like... there were shades of... Oh, what are they called? Those two in Diamonds Are Forever. Those two fucking weirdos who attacked James Bond with the flaming kebab skewers.
Oh, I don't know. I've not watched a Bond film for 20 years.
Oh, well. Anyway, they were a bit like a couple of Bond baddies, weren't they? Thundergrip and Sven.
So, Michael elaborates a bit more on the diet that they had. And he says that we were all like a pint and a pie sort of fellas. And it was that thing they'd go off in the summer and put 2 stone on, then run it off when they came back to pre-season training.
Yeah.
But Glenn, of course, had been abroad.
Foreign ways.
Didn't he work with Wenger? Was he
Monaco when Wenger was there? Wenger was like his Svengali.
Yeah.
He was like his mentor and Svengali. Everything. He was obsessed with the Wenger way. It's all that.
Yeah.
Now, there's a thing that they eat in France, lads. Don't be scared. It's called broccoli, right? And it looks... Get this, I'm not joking. It looks like little miniature trees.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's quite cute, quite a novelty.
It don't taste like a... No, now stop, Paul. Paul Mercer, stop crying, right? You don't need to cry.
Paul,
stop
I want you to imagine for this, Paul. I want you to imagine that you are a big, scary giant and you're eating trees. Now, don't you feel special?
I don't want to eat a tree! Stop it. Everyone stop panicking. Sit down. Get back in your chairs. Why? Stop running around.
Put your seatbelts back on. What's
everyone
wrong with you?
Stop it. And look, now I'm going to show you a piece of this broccoli, and I don't want any of you to start screaming or throwing yourselves on the floor, right, or crying or trying to run out of the room because John Gorman has locked all the doors. Now, this is a piece of broccoli. This is what Zidane eats.
And that's what he says as well. It was a bit jarring because it was all too new to us. Food would be boiled chicken, boiled rice or boiled pasta and broccoli for every meal. No sauce, no nothing. And the motto above the door of the
Where's
camp canteen...
Where's the sauce, man? No sauce!
I've brought some sachets in my suitcase. I'll bring them down.
I've got all the different colours. Brown, red, yellow, the lot. Wait.
The motto above the door of the camp canteen was, get this, chew to win.
Oh.
Basically, what this meant was he didn't want any of us eating loads of food. Instead, he wanted us to chew every mouthful 3 or 4 times more than we normally would. So that you would extract more fucking vitamins or whatever from them. This is a bit like Nuts in May. Have you seen Nuts in May, the Mike Lee film?
Yeah.
Where he gets his wife to chew her food 72 times before she swallows it. But she says that it was something like a mushroom, it'll just disintegrate before you chew 72 times.
But exactly. People are always on about fucking chewing, and it pisses me off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just another thing that people use. It's another stick people used to beat you with. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There is not a single fucking element of the human existence that there won't be some miserable fucking Lampard trying to lecture you about how you're doing it wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
people tell you nowadays, I mean, one of the most common things you hear is people telling you that you're breathing wrong.
Well,
don't they?
This
no,
is a popular
it's important
thing.
To breathe. I know it's fucking important to breathe. You can't teach me how to breathe. It's the one thing that, it's the great leveller, isn't it? Breathing. Because it's the one thing that every cunt can do from the moment they come out of their mum's tummy.
All have, you know, some of us are better than others, but we all give it our best shot, don't we?
Yeah. And it's like, don't fucking try and lecture me about breathing. Breathing's, how I breathe is my business, and how I chew is my business. And I don't need to be guilt-tripped about the basics, do you know what I mean?
When I stop fucking breathing, that's when I want your input, if you've got anything to add. You know,
and when I stop
call
chewing,
999.
When I stop chewing, you'll know I fucking finished my dinner, and it's time for fucking pudding. What?
So, yeah, chew to win was the motto. And he says the broader daily regimen was no more palatable. This is good. Each day we wake up, have breakfast, and then train from 10 till half 11. Then you have lunch at 1 o'clock. And then, between lunch and 7 o'clock at night, you'd do absolutely nothing whatsoever other than staring at the wall in your room. So it's a bit...
Capello-esque. Imagine the amount of wanking that these lads did. They were young. They're mostly, some of them are in their teens. I mean, Michael Owen, 17 years old, he's probably peak wanking age.
Of course,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even the older lads were still, you think of them as older, but the older lads are still like early 30s. Do you know what I mean? Which is still, I mean, when I was in my early 30s, I was probably still wanking quite a lot.
Yeah, I'd knock one out now and again. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And when you're bored...
I mean, if I was to put it this way, my early 30s, if I was locked in a room from lunch till 7 every day all on my own with nothing to do, then I would have definitely been doing most days.
Probably till it bled, I reckon.
Looking out the window wistfully, seeing if there was any French ladies I could entice up to the room.
Looking down at Sunita sunbathing by the pool. Trigger.
With my binoculars.
They'd do nothing other than stare at the wall. By the time dinner rolled round, you'd be genuinely excited to go downstairs, not because of the bland culinary delights that are weird, but because you could actually talk to someone. I wonder if they were in one man per room, then they didn't have roommates even. That makes it sound like that's how it was.
I'd
fucking
prefer that.
Hell.
Yeah, but privacy's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially if you're wanking.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, you've got to have one in the bedroom, one in the bathroom, haven't you, if you're sharing a room?
Yeah. Mind you, these footballers.
Yeah, they're into all sorts, aren't they?
Have I ever told you that story? And I will not fucking name the footballer, although it is a footballer that is known to you and I and most people. Anyway, he told me about when he was young and he had just broken into the first team at his club, Premier League club. I can't believe I haven't told you this, but I might have done. And he was, and it was an away day. It was a away trip. And it was Friday night, and he'd been told by the manager that he was going to play the next day, make his debut. And he was rooming with a more senior pro. And the senior pro was in the shower. And the lad I'm talking about was lying on his bed watching telly. Mm. And two other senior pros knocked on the door, and then the door was sort of unlocked, so they just burst in. And they asked for their mate. They said, they looked at the young lad on the bed, and they went, "Where's so-and-so?" And he went, "Oh, he's in the shower." And they went, "And who the fuck are you?" And he introduced himself and he said, "Well, I'm so-and-so. And
I'm Johnny Newkid."
Yeah, and he goes, I'm playing in the game tomorrow. And one of them goes, "Oh, fucking are you? Think you're a big man, do you?" And listen to this. He said, as he said it, the senior pro, who was a goalkeeper, reached under the duvet, because he was lying under the duvet, grabbed his cock, right, and started wanking him off, but in a way that this young lad, I mean, when he told me the story, he was no longer a young lad, he was a retired footballer, but he was just telling me, he said, yeah, he goes, it was sort of like, I said, that's like sexual assault, mate, and he went, yeah, but it was done in a sort of bantery way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, I think you're Billy Big Bollocks, do you? Let's have a feel of this.
Different times, wasn't it?
And I said, what did you say? And he just said, well, to be honest, they left. And all I was doing was like looking at, quickly checking my cock to make sure that it was all in one piece still.
Nothing had come out the end.
Yeah. That's really dark, isn't it?
Was there not, I don't want to name names in case this isn't right, but I'm sure there was a goalkeeper at a club back in the 80s, and eventually it came out that he had a thing for putting deep heat on his gloves and then sticking a finger up the arse of the apprentices.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? It was all that kind of initiation shit.
Yeah, that's what it was all part of.
Yeah.
It's sort of initiation, weird shit that goes on. And it obviously sometimes, probably not the case anymore, but in the old days, it was really fucking borderline stuff.
People are fucking horrible, aren't they? Anyway, so yeah, he says you'd be genuinely excited to go downstairs just because there'd be someone to talk to. Then you'd go back to your room, stare at the walls till you went to sleep again, and repeat. It was also sterile and boring. And yeah, you could imagine Gaza would have just flipped.
Yeah.
In that kind of situation, so probably for the best that he didn't go to 98. We'll leave it there because the next bit is in the first match of the World Cup. Where,
yeah.
The action
and,
starts.
And heady times for Michael Owen. I mean, it was incredible, this World Cup. Although yeah. England, people, you often forget that you only got, that England only got to the second round.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it felt
yeah.
like Italia 90. The France 98 feels like one of those legendary World Cups where England went on this incredible adventure. But they got to the second round. And it was only an unlucky draw because we were good enough in that World Cup, in my opinion, to go to the semi-finals.
Yeah.
But we were unlucky because we got to, off to a slow start in the group and then came up against a really good Argentina team well, in the second round.
It was an unlucky draw, but then it was unlucky that we didn't go through on pens after we played with 10 men.
Yes, exactly.
So, the game, so
we were unlucky. It was a great team, and I think it would have gone to the semi-finals if it had got through that. But there was lots of wonderful things about the team and the, all the games. But the easily the biggest and most amazing thing was this 17-year-old kid getting yeah. picked in the squad in the first place, which was amazing in itself. But then on top of that, fucking going on to score goals, including one classic, which we'll get to, and just lighting up the whole tournament. It was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the way he describes it as well, which we'll get in the next episode,
yeah, is I love
fantastic
the way he describes
well.
The goal.
It just yeah. makes your heart sing. So that's yeah. it. We had a go. I think we got away with it, so we'll do another one.
I think it was good. We'll do another episode of this
next week, and that is the Owen Odyssey. Thanks for listening. TTFN, dickheads.
At yours.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.